This is Radio Guy Reflection.
I'm living on the air in Cincinnati.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Here is a complete disc jockey show with all the modern pace of today's exciting radio.
Well, you guys hear anything good on the radio lately?
On November the 2nd, 1920, the first radio station, KDKA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, signed on the air. Over the years, radio has changed from radio dramas and live performances to the age of the disc jockey. From the man many believe popularized the term rock and roll, Alan Freed, and legendary radio personalities like Wolfman Jack, Dick Clark, Charlie Tuna, Don Imus, and the men who made talk radio what it is today, Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck. Hi, I'm Dave Denton. I'm a radio guy. And even went by that name on the air in Missouri. I'm a radio veteran who started spinning records in 1974 and have seen the industry change from 45s to LPs, carded music, CDs, and now music on hard drives. In this podcast, we'll take a look back not only at my career, but other men and women who have worked in radio entertaining you. This is Radio Guy Reflections. Before I introduce my guest today, just a reminder that Radio Guy Reflections is brought to you by Dave's Voice Works, that is WORX. If you need a voice for commercials, dramatic reading, or production of any type that needs a special voice, contact me at ddenton530@gmail.com. And also by Turnbuckle Trash, a podcast for fans of pro wrestling, by fans of pro wrestling, and it's an at-work and family-friendly podcast that follows the world of the WWE, All Elite, NWA, and more. It's at TurnbuckleTrash.net and also all major podcast suppliers. Today on Radio Guy Reflections, one of the most familiar voices in radio in Salt Lake City, Utah, and in the entire state. She's originally from San Diego and a midday voice on FM 100 in Salt Lake City, but she's so much more. She's been involved in news reporting, TV programs, and the voice of one of the nation's top collegiate gymnastics teams in the entire nation. She is Rebecca Cressman, and Rebecca, I'm glad to call you a friend. How you doing, Rebecca?
I'm doing great, and I have fond memories of when you and I actually worked in the same studio together, Dave.
That was a long time ago, Rebecca. Well, I wanted to talk to you about your career in radio. And I know you're from San Diego, and you went to Brigham Young University. Is that where you got the radio bug, or did you had it before that?
You know what? The funny thing is, in high school, I was coached by a new program at another high school in town, and they said, hey, we're going to start a broadcast for high schoolers, but you'd have to switch high schools. So I actually went over, visited for about a week, and then decided, nah, broadcasting isn't for me, and went my high school graduated, went to college, studied communications, but I didn't study broadcasting. And it wasn't until I got married to a former TV producer. He used to produce TV news. And one day I answered the phone and his boss said, I like your voice. Do you think you'd want to ever voice commercials? And I had babies and needed to buy diapers. And I said, yeah. And kind of taught myself how to do voice work overnight. I didn't get much sleep that first night and walked into a studio and began my voice work pretending like I knew what I was doing. And then it kind of took off from there.
Well, you know, I always thought you were extremely talented when we worked together in Logan because your husband Dale started working for Utah State University. That's what brought you to Logan. And then that we hired you at the radio station I was working at, KGNT, and also K105, The Car. You were so talented, and you just took to it very quickly. And I've always said that about Rebecca, one of the nicest people I've ever known, but also a very talented announcer.
That's really nice of you, Dave. I have a lot of memories of sitting across the studio from you and learning how to take the toss in a show, and being on the edge of my seat because I always felt like a radio when you have co-hosts, it's like a tennis match. And it's a really good pairing, and you're so generous to work with Dave. Then they serve you a ball, and you return it, and you're back and forth, and you're never quite sure what's going to happen as you're playing this live show together. And so thank you for being so generous and talented. It was a lot of fun to be in the radio court with you, Dave.
You know what? I really enjoyed it, too. When we were together, you also did some solo work for us, and then you know what you did to me? You went to the competition. I was so sad when you left our group and went to the Cache Valley Media Group, but you did such a wonderful job over there. I know that they talk so highly of you, too. So your years there, what was it like when you had this friendship with your other competitors, and then here you go working for another radio group, but you knew everybody? That had to be sometimes very nice, but also a little bit iffy at times, I would think.
It's very strange. I felt guilty going and moving over to competitors. And I think when someone aligns with a station and you want it to do well and you get close to those coworkers and you leave to the enemy, you do feel a little guilty. But one thing I know that you've experienced throughout your life is that people that are in radio, there's so many people that are really fascinating. And you all have in common that you love the human story, that you love interacting with people and telling their stories. And so, you know, every time you go to a different station, whether it's radio or television, your circle of really interesting friends gets wider and wider. And so that's the good side, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when you talk about that, that was one of the reasons I thought about doing this podcast. I haven't been able to find anything like it. And I know that radio people have just so many interesting and diverse personalities. And I don't like to call us disc jockeys anymore. I like to call us entertainers, because we are basically in the entertainment business, and we have a certain amount of celebrity, and it's what we do with that celebrity. And I think you and I were just talking about that a few minutes ago. If you don't mind, let's get a little personal here. A couple of years ago, I saw on Facebook that you were battling cancer, and I would like to see how you're doing with your battle against cancer and what type of cancer it was, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I was diagnosed in June of 2019 with stage 2B breast cancer. And prior to that, for about 8 years, I had volunteered with the Komen organization, trying to help educate women on the risks and the seriousness of breast cancer and how to take care of their own health, because I had lost my mother and my two grandmothers to breast cancer. So when I saw that, you know, the report that what I had was early but still stage 2B, I kind of thought, here it is, it's my turn. It's my turn to experience what so many other incredible women have gone through. And I hope I survive. There's always fear, right?
Mm, right.
And then I realized that if I had a microphone and if I was honest with my experience, maybe we would be able to encourage women to get more mammograms and find their cancer earlier than when I found mine. Better to find it early, right? Stage 0 or stage 1. The earlier you find it, the greater the chances of our recovery.
How did you handle that announcement? I mean, did you do it on your radio show? Did you do it on Facebook? Or how did you handle that announcement to let people know what you were going through?
The first thing I did is came into work and let my boss know, and then said, you know, we're a couple of months away from Breast Cancer Month, and let's tell this story. and let's see whether we can help the local health department encourage women to get their screening. One of the interesting things about Utah is that Utah women are very, very busy, like in all other states, but we have one of the lowest rates for mammogram in the country,
right?
Mammogram screening. And that's when we, if you use that, you have a much greater chance of finding breast cancer when it's early and most treatable. And so here we are, a community that cares about health and cares about family, and we're, as women, not taking care of ourselves like we should. So we talked about that. We called the health department. I have a wonderful team of account executives. Those are those who sell advertising. They contacted other partners and said, we're going to do an expanded Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Rebecca is going to tell her story. And I created five small 60-second kind of PSAs where I said, I'm Rebecca Cressman, and I've been diagnosed with cancer this year, and this is what I've learned. Mm-hmm. And I shared those. I also went on Facebook Live in the month, I think, of August, and talked about my Facebook Live on my radio station's Facebook page, and talked about the diagnosis for about a half hour and fielded questions. And that video was seen by thousands, and I heard from so many people. In fact, here we are, maybe 18 months later, and I probably still get two from women who diagnosis. And I try to guide them and give them hope. And I know you're a cancer survivor. Sometimes it's very helpful to talk to someone who's been there and done that. And it's been an honor. And I'm not done yet.
Rebecca, when you talk about breast cancer and me being a cancer survivor, here's how I handled that situation. One of my dear friends, who was dying of cancer at the time, she was the matron of honor at my wedding, and I was the best man at her wedding because her husband was my college roommate, and she was really struggling. And with the radio station and the Cache Valley Cruise Inn here in Cache Valley, which is a huge event, I was trying to do a fundraiser, and the Beach Boys were coming in concert, and I thought about maybe getting them to sign a boogie board and then auctioning it off during the Cache Valley Cruise Inn. Well, 3 weeks before that event, I found out that I had prostate cancer. And boy, you get that C word, and it just knocks you for a loop. You got to admit that, you know, you hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was kind of depressed about that, even though prostate cancer, if you're going to get cancer, it's very survivable. It's a slow-growing cancer. But still, I decided to wait with the permission of my bosses and also the Cancer Society and the people from the Cache Valley Cruise Inn to make the announcement. And I was on stage getting ready to introduce the Beach Boys in concert, and they had already signed the boogie board. And so I made my announcement, and I felt kind of bad because so many of my dear friends were in the audience, but, you know, of course, emotional. And then as I'm walking off the stage, here comes Mike Love of the Beach Boys, the man who wrote all the songs, one of the voices, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and he hugs me and wishes me luck. Wow. And I remembered at that time that Dennis Wilson passed away from prostate cancer. So almost every one of the Beach Boys band came up to me, shook my hand, hugged me, and wished me well. And then the reaction of the people, the local community, was absolutely incredible, and we raised a lot of money for the American Cancer Society that weekend. And I think that we have that opportunity, and I think you talked about it, and I think also we have the opportunity but the responsibility to let people know that we go through things too and that we understand and we can help educate. And I love that story about how you did the five PSAs talking about your struggles at that time. It's not easy to go through. And I think when you hear somebody like yourself, it means so much to the women out there that have to do that. So how often do since I know very little about it, how often do you have to be tested, Rebecca?
So in my situation, I've already had surgery. I've already had chemotherapy. I've already had radiation. And typically every 6 months you would get a mammogram, or every year. And they added an MRI, which gives you a little bit more detail to my screening. And we saw a little bit of an area of concern on one of the areas, the breast, where I had the cancer before. So I'm getting more MRIs as we watch that, and hopefully it's not the return of cancer. I'm feeling pretty optimistic that it's not. So I'm getting MRIs every 6 months, and I'm getting checked by a doctor every 3 months. They do physical exams. There's no blood test for breast cancer, at least for the type of breast cancer I have. It's not like they can do a blood panel and say, oh, your numbers are up for the estrogen-sensitive breast cancer I have. It's a matter of looking for symptoms and signs that it's bad.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have been very involved in other public service groups, and I've seen you on public service announcements with other TV personalities when you were doing some stuff with KSL. How is it in the broadcast community, since I'm outside of Salt Lake, how did the broadcast community react to your announcement about breast cancer?
I'm really sorry today that you had to go through cancer. It doesn't matter whether it's one that they say an easier diagnosis. Hearing that you have cancer just leaves you breathless for a bit. It's a difficult experience, so I'm sorry about that. I think that when we're on the mic, we are so blessed because our circle of friends is so wide, right? We're so lucky. People call in, listeners bring blankets. In fact, I almost got to the point where I was embarrassed to share my journey on Facebook. It makes me emotional now or anywhere, because I would get so much support. I still feel tender about that, because I know there are a lot of people, Dave, that don't always feel like they're getting the support that they need in their hardship. But in the broadcast circle, I had television anchors reach out and privately, are you okay? Organizations, what can we do for you? Mary Nichols of KUTV had been through breast cancer herself. She and I are friends from way back. She made sure I was, how am I doing? We shared experiences. KSL-TV, put me on their morning show to talk about it on a couple times, so that we could just have the community check in and ideally learn from my journey. Studio 5 had me on. KSL News Radio had me on to talk about the experience. It's scary when someone you know is diagnosed, and I think it caught a lot of people off guard. I'm a runner. I'm typically pretty healthy, so I think it just caught a lot of us by surprise. You're the broadcast family. I'm lucky enough to be a part of this broadcast family in Salt Lake. All competition goes away when we talk about life, right?
That is so true. It the support that you've received, and you mentioned a name, and I have no idea. I've never met Mary Nichols before, but I remember when she was going through that, and I was flipping around the dial the other night and came across her doing a newscast on KUTV, and I remember thinking, man, she is so talented. And I remember when I first moved to Utah 26 years ago, I was going, that was one of the best news anchors I had seen in years in a market that size. I was surprised that no big market had taken her up, but I'm so glad, because she is so good at what she does, and I'm just a fan of hers, and I'm a big fan of yours, and I want to wish you the best in your struggles. And you said it's not over with, but you'll be in my prayers, my friend.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think both of us have had quite a beautiful life in broadcasting, right? Being able to talk to everybody from a neighbor down the street to a celebrity or musicians. It's been quite extraordinary. And I'm so glad our paths have crossed. And I love that you're not putting down the mic. You're going to keep podcasting and, and, and telling the stories of people in this world. You're just the best at it, Dave. So thank you so much.
You know what? That means a lot to me. And when you mentioned about meeting so many interesting people, you've done more of the news end than I have, but you've also been in the radio entertainment end of it. Tell me some of the people that you've had the chance to meet or maybe interview that were just so, they just floored you at how nice they were, and maybe without mentioning names, one or two that kind of surprised you at how their attitude, because that does happen in this industry, you know?
I'll tell you, before Bill Cosby was facing any criminal charges, I was interviewing Bill. And I had this idea that I was going to be interviewing the nice Dr. Huxtable. And so I was so excited to interview him. And I did not have a positive experience at all.
Wow.
And in fact, when I got done, halfway through our interview, I actually had to pause and say, Mr. Cosby, I'd appreciate if you were more respectful and kind in our interview.
Whoa.
And, by the time we got done, and I obviously edited all that out, by the time we got done, I said to someone, wow, I just feel like I lost someone that I really, really love and care about, because this was just, he was just really polite, and I could say a few more things, but it just was a shock to me.
Yeah.
And so that was that prefaced all the news about him, and I put it in context. I've been lucky enough to interview Ellen DeGeneres. She was so funny. One of the most gracious interviews with Tony Bennett. He just is so lovely. You know, he's just fantastic and warm and sweet, and it makes you feel like when you were done with the interview that you're just going to go, out together and go do something and get together for Christmas. He's so delightful. There's a lot of people that I've met over the years, but those kind of just stand out.
And that's one of the great things about what we do as, I hate to call it, as our occupation, because I always called playing radio. I always got to play radio. But it was one of the things that I think that people, they always say, what a great job, and you get to meet so many interesting people. And, I've sat on the tour bus with people like Mark Chestnut, and I got to have dinner with Charlie Daniels, and I met Reba McEntire. I got to go backstage and talk a long time with Garth Brooks, and then newsmakers like Senator Frank Church, and I got to not really interview him, but I got to meet Michael Dukakis when he was running for president. So this is an industry where you get to do things that a lot of people don't get to do, and they love hearing these stories. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast and talk to you about some of your positives. And then, there's also the other side of this industry. It can be a little cutthroat at times. Have you found that?
Happy, but you're talking about the positive, and I needed to make sure I shared this.
Okay.
I got a call once that came in from Gladys Knight's daughter.
Ooh.
And she said, hey, we're looking at having you be a TV host of a one-hour special about my mom. And my mom's going to be in Hawaii, and celebrating there. Do you want to be the host of it? And I was so excited. Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Gladys Knight. So I flew into Hawaii, and I'm there, and I'm hanging out with Gladys Knight, and I'm, interviewing her and following her around with the concerts, and I'm just pinch me. And then there was this moment. We're at the Polynesian Cultural Center, and her brother is one of the pips, and he and I are walking through the Polynesian Cultural Center, which is like a tropical Disneyland, right? And we're walking through it, and I said to him, oh, I love that song, Midnight Train to Georgia. My mom's favorite song I grew up. And he said, you want to sing it? So here he and I are walking through the PCC, and we're both going, woo-hoo! I came home that night, and I thought, I can die now. I just was singing and strolling through an island with one of the pips, and had a fabulous time there.
I am so jealous of that story. I am not kidding you. When I was a teenager, I would tell my friends, and I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, during the time of racial integration, but I would tell my friends when I was 14, 15 years old, that if Gladys Knight was in the room, I'd kiss her smack on the mouth. I mean, I love that woman, and I got to see her in concert a few times, but I've never had the chance to meet her. But I'll tell you this, when I grew up, I tell people that when I grew up, I wanted to be a temp, a top, or a pip, because I loved R&B music so much. And I am totally jealous that you got to do that with Gladys Knight.
She is one of my all-time favorite musical performers. So when I had a chance to actually meet her, but there's nothing like spending a weekend with one of the most powerful women in the music industry. And she's always trying to encourage other people and bring them up to be the best who they can be. And so I admire her so much. So hopefully another time I'll get to fly to Hawaii with Gladys Knight and I'll get to bring you Dave. All right, just don't kiss her on the mouth.
I'm a happily married man now, so I can't do that anymore. But, you know, Gladys Knight shares our religious faith. And I just remember when she was doing that birthday for the prophet, and she was talking about that, and she says, I love the church. I love everything about the church, but we got to work on the music. And I laughed out loud, one of my favorite quotes. And
Amen and hallelujah.
Yes, ma'am, because I love Gladys Knight, and I'm so jealous. But let's talk about something else that you do that I'm kind of jealous of again, too, because I've done it on a little bit of a basis, but you were the stadium announcer for one of the top collegiate gymnastics team, consistently in the top 10 almost every year and trying to go for that national championship all the time from the University of Utah. That's got to be a special thing for you.
It's so much fun, and it's so extraordinary. So when you're a PA announcer, as you know, since you've done it once before, is, you know, you're right on the floor with these athletes. So you're feet away, and you just see their strength, their concentration, and you're just cheering for them to be their best. So I love it. It's like a front seat into these kids in this exciting time of their life when they're 18 to 24 or so. And they're just phenomenal. And I work with this wonderful team of producers, of people that are trying to keep the scores and, you know, make sure that we know what's going on with the refs. And it's just extraordinary. It's one of my favorite things that I've done in my life. And it's one thing, though, Dave, to voice commercials for radio and TV and interview people. It's another thing to be an arena with 15,000 people in there and have to make your voice sound big, you know, like,
yeah.
Go Red Run! No, I'm not going to do that. Just to try to make that big arena sound. It's part of playing, right?
Yes.
Part of playing on the microphone, and it's just a lot of fun.
And you do that. I remember when I was doing it for the Utah State Aggie football team in stadium, and I would use a little mic technique, you know, getting close to the microphone to get some of the effects that I wanted to get, and far away from the microphone when I was screaming into it. But yeah, there's a real talent there. And I wanted to tell people that are listening right now, you heard Rebecca Wright for a gymnastics meet at the University of Utah. 15,000 people will show up for a gymnastics meet. Most organizations and most collegiate teams don't get near that amount. And that's got to be very much something that you notice with that team, that the crowd really gets those young ladies really involved with what they're doing, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The crowd are people who are such loyal fans. And the University of Utah has incredible coaches, and they have a wonderful program, and they bring in some of the best athletes. Some of them are from the state of Utah, and others are from, you know, all across the country. But it is phenomenal. If, you know, you're sitting there and you have sold out arena after arena after arena because they are just such incredible athletes to watch and perform. And I hope I get the right phrasing, right? But, yeah, it has the largest audience of a collegiate sport in, I believe, the NCAA. I mean, it's just quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it's like when you think about women's sports in general, you usually, you know, like Utah State University, Utah State's basketball team, the women's basketball team, they're lucky to get 800 people in there. But you get UT Knoxville, which will sell out the Lady Vols all the time. That's what U of U is in collegiate gymnastics. They are one of the top programs, not only with the athletes, but also with the attendance. And, you know, I got to say, once again, I got that little jealousy monster going on right now because I just think that is so cool that you get to do that.
Thank you. I'm lucky. Really, really, really lucky. They were looking for an announcer about 12 years ago. They talked to me about 15 years ago, and it wasn't a good time for me. My kids are a little younger, and then they talked to me again 12 years ago, and I thought, I walked into that giant Huntsman Arena, sat down with a microphone. It was empty. Tried it out, and I thought, this will really be a different chapter in my life, and I'm so glad I did it. So Dave, someday when the pandemic is over, you'll have to come and sit down on the floor with me.
Oh, I would absolutely love that, because I love gymnastics. I love watching the athletes there. So I'd love to do that sometime. But let's talk a little bit more about Rebecca Kressman on FM 100. How long have you been with FM 100 in Salt Lake?
I've been with FM 100 in Salt Lake for 15 years.
Wow.
That's a long time, isn't
it? It is a long time.
Yeah, and the Bonneville, the larger company, originally hired me away to work as a morning show co-host of a women's radio station in Utah. And that radio station was on a small AM signal. And after about a year, they realized, you know what, we're just not going to be able to maintain this. So I split over to FM 100 and KSL News Radio at that time. But I've done the morning show on FM 100 for a couple of years, and then I've been on middays, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for, I think, 12 years now. Wow. In that one position. It's been a long time.
Whoa.
And I love it. I'm really lucky. It's great music. Connected to a great community, and so it's not talk radio, so it's a lot more music with just a little bit of talk, but it's, to me, a perfect place to call home.
Yeah, and there's that little bit of a misconception with people in radio, and I think we were originally scheduled to do this yesterday, and we're doing this on a Thursday afternoon, because they think all you do is you go sit down in front of the microphone and you just start talking, but boy, so much more, because you have to do preparation not only for your show, but like this afternoon, we had to delay a little bit because you were doing what we call production. You were doing commercials, and it takes up a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I would say about 2 hours a day is writing and voicing commercials.
Wow.
For clients, either on, you know, companies either on that advertise on FM 100.3 or our sister stations or on television, but definitely it's not as if you just stand in front of the mic. Most of us that are working in, you know, markets now, we write, we voice, we record, we edit, we produce, we mix it with music. We do have a professional commercial producers in the broadcast house, but I use those for certain purposes, and other times I'm wasting on my own. So yeah, and then you have to prep for what you're going to talk about when you're on air, and then you're running the equipment in the studio, right? Or the ones that are pushing the buttons and recording the calls and editing those phone calls and putting it back on the air. But that's a lot of fun.
With this pandemic that hit just about a year ago, when we really started getting hit hard about that, how did that hit the broadcast industry with you and with your colleagues at the FM 100.3?
For us, we have three main on-air talents that are live every day. And so the company made a decision to try to get as many people home as possible so that if one person gets sick, it doesn't hit the others like a domino. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to make sure that we were all safe. So I would be the thread, the common link between the morning and the afternoon person, mm-hmm. where if I'm working from home, there's there's nobody rubbing elbows with the morning and the afternoon people, right?
Right.
And so, and granted, at that point, I was still recently coming off of chemotherapy and radiation, and my immune system wasn't strong. So they have me broadcasting from home 4 out of 5 days. So, and then some of our production staff work from home, and some of our engineers rotate at home. So they try to keep, 50% of us at home if possible.
Yeah.
So that, in fact, the building's pretty empty to try to keep us healthy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's incredible. And I know that our industry, because we are usually in a small room, sharing microphones, sharing all kinds of different equipment. I know that my job that recently ended, I was doing an entire morning show we called it the Denton Stitchin', my little studio I have set up basically in my kitchen. I mean, my refrigerator's not 10 feet from me, so, but I would prepare sometimes three and a half hours to get things on the air. Of course, morning radio is a little bit different than, midday type radio. Mm-hmm. It's longer breaks,
that's right,
and more preparation. And then what I was doing, I did very heavy production, sound effects and little comedy drops and things like that. But it does take a real talent to put together a show, because we're storytellers. We're telling the story of the music, the radio station, and we're sharing things about ourselves that sometimes are kind of personal, but we are friends with these people that hear us on the radio. We develop a friendship with them. Haven't you found that over the years?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I just wish I had a photo of your stitching, Dave.
I'll try to send you one.
I use my guest room. My husband and I, we got some PVC pipe from Home Depot and constructed like a phone booth, rectangle. And then I ordered some moving blankets because they're sound absorbing. And I draped those over. And I bought a table, a high desk, slid that inside that phone booth. And I bought the processor and the things that I needed. My work gave me a laptop. And I just created the studio so that I could edit audio and record, and it's quite strange to be doing radio in the middle of a pandemic.
Definitely.
But you mentioned, everything is not normal, and it's important for us to have things we can count on. So I'm sure that your listeners appreciate it, even if you're broadcasting from your stitchin, the fact that when they woke up in the morning, they're safe. And I think we feel that sense that music and radio, whether it's radio news or whatever it is, it's a tool, it's a part of people's lives. And so even if we have to do it on our roof or whatever it may be, we kind of feel that commitment to be there, to be there for the people who are your friends, who are listening and who share their life with you, and you share your life with them.
And then there are times when it's so important for us to be on the air, like this pandemic. Have you ever had the experience where, let's just go back a few years ago, like when we had 9/11, how important did you take that blessing of being on the radio, but how it was just one of those weird times when you knew that you had to be on the radio, give the information, give it correctly, and tell people everything was going to be all right. It was an incredible time, and I think our industry as a whole just did a wonderful job with that.
I do have memories of that, and I was working in radio news at that time, and we were trying to figure out what was happening while other people were. At the same time, the larger audience was. They tried to work so hard to get elements in, and are we safe, and get that information on the air, and just news break after news break. And I remember I didn't get done till noon, and I'd been on and off since 5 that morning. And I remember finishing at noon, and then it makes me tear up now, but I remember thinking, oh my gosh, my kids. The first time in all morning I've even been able to think, are my kids okay? And it made me cry because I thought my duty was to keep this communication and news breaks going. And yet I'm still a mom. And, you know, my kids were safe and tucked in to their elementary school and such. But it definitely had its emotional weight. And often when you're on air in those big news stories, you've got to maintain your energy and keep focused on what your main job is, which is to give that information. Same thing with the tornadoes that came through. You know, you just got to deliver that. That's your primary responsibility. But you're still a neighbor, right? And you're still a husband or wife or a friend. And you've got those other concerns in the back of your heart. And once you're off air, you get to finally breathe and feel it a little bit more fully than so when you're on the air and you've got a job to do.
So speaking of that tornado, were you at the broadcast house with KSL when that occurred?
I was actually still working up in Cache Valley Radio.
Oh, okay.
But I happened to be visiting. I was being interviewed down in at the BYU for a news director position, radio news. And so I was just coming back from an interview when the tornadoes were hitting. So I pulled over on the freeway and did live reports from my phone outside of downtown Salt Lake City. To the AM news station and 1320, is that what it is?
610.
I can't.
KVNU.
610.
Yeah, KVNU, yeah.
And just literally pulled my car over on the side of the freeway.
That's incredible.
I was worried because the tornadoes were coming northward. They're moving from Salt Lake up around the mountain range headed towards Cache Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my little ones at a babysitter, and I remember thinking, you know, I got to call that babysitter and pull the kids in. You know, does she know what to do in a tornado? Those of us, you've lived in Tennessee, I've lived in Texas, Wisconsin, and Saskatchewan, I've gone through tornadoes. So I was like, I know what needs to happen. But I sure hope that she's safeguarding my kids.
Going back to 9/11, I when you were talking about your kids, it made me think about that terrible day because I was doing a morning show and I had to switch from being the morning show host to helping out the news department because that was my job, was as the program director, and I was kind of coordinating, telling the news department I had this person making these telephone calls, trying to get local reaction and local reports. And then I got a call from my sister in Tennessee because one of my sisters and her son were actually in New York City, only a few miles from the World Trade Center, doing some medical tests about a genetic disease that runs in my family. And we weren't in touch with them for 24 hours after that.
My goodness.
And the knowledge that this was going on, but I had that responsibility to even go on the air and talk about what was going on locally with that. And there was a lot of local Cache Valley news going on because we had somebody from Tremont and a couple of people from Cache Valley that were actually killed in the attacks on and it was just a horrible, horrible time. But I just keep on going back. And when you said you were worried about your kids, it just got this flashback. I was worried about my sister and my nephew, and then not being able to get in touch with them because they were part of the evacuation. It was just a horrible time for all of us. And I think we all have stories like that. I know Erinny has some great stories about that. She did work for me on Cool 103.9, and she always talked about it every year and how it affected her. So we are people, you know, and things affect our lives. And I think that we also have that opportunity as radio announcers and in the radio and broadcast industry. And sometimes I don't think we take it as seriously as we probably should and how we affect other people's lives. And Rebecca, I am just so proud of you and so proud to have known you over the years and know your talent and know how much I respect you. And I just wanted to let you know that.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. I was thinking about some of the other big news stories, the riots, and my friends who were, you know, TV news reporters print reporters, and they're right in the middle of that, trying to document things and trying to broadcast information so people will be safe. And I remember I was doing morning radio when there was a shooting at a mall in Salt Lake City. And,
right.
Doing the wrap up the next morning, I think that it's been a very difficult time for journalists. They've been attacked quite a bit, and people have lost their faith. People have told people fake news, etc. And what's hard is for those of us who work really closely with journalists, we understand that though they may not be perfect, most of them are real people that feel very committed to being there when history is being made and communicating back to the community what's happening so their community is safe and informed. And they risk their life doing
yes.
it. And so it's quite it's an honor, right? And I think we do need to understand that or maybe count our lucky stars that we get to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely also take on the responsibility of making sure we're as accurate as we can be, right?
And then sometimes you got that time crunch and things can happen that you might get a quote a little bit wrong, and boy, whew, you got to be very, very careful. Rebecca, I know you've been in the car and you've been so gracious to talk to us about your career. Rebecca Kressman, I wanted to thank you once again for being a part of this podcast. It's actually the second one at this time, but we're going to grow this. And I just, once again, I wanted to thank you personally for not only doing this podcast, but also being a dear friend. And I wish you the best in not only in your career, but your family life and your personal life with your battle with breast cancer. And you know you're in my prayers.
Thank you, Dave. And thanks for checking in. You've helped me remember a lot of beautiful things. It's a wonderful life, Dave. So thank you for allowing me to be your guest.
Well, thank you very much. That's Rebecca Kressman on Radio Guy Reflections. And that's Radio Guy Reflections, a podcast about radio and the people behind the microphone. In future podcasts, we'll look at what makes a successful and sometimes a train wreck of a radio show.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
We'll talk with people who started in radio and moved on to success in other fields. Radio Guy Reflections. We'll be back soon with another show about radio and the men and women who produce the radio programs you've loved to listen to. Radio Guy Reflections is a production of Dave's Voice Works.